Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
So we have a few more loose ends to tie up, no pun intended. And we also have some very interesting questions to address. Alvin wanted to know about what happens if you pin the edges of the tzitzis together so that the front and the back are pinned together. Does that pose a problem or is that okay? So hopefully we'll cover that today, as well as concluding the sugya that we began on Tuesday. So let's just remind ourselves what happened. Rabbi Zeira said that if I have a pair of tzitzis that has, right, that it's four sets of strings inside of it, and then I put another four set of strings inside of it, so is it kosher, is it not kosher, is it a machlokes? Or is it a machlokes, whether it's a machlokes? It's a machlokes, excellent. So what did Rabbi Zeira say? Rabbi Zeira himself was of the opinion that it's kosher, excellent. Rabbi Zeira was of the opinion that it is kosher, and I don't think we had a name, but what did we call the opinion that said or suggested that it ought not to be kosher? Baltosif, we weren't sure what the impact would be, right? Because Baltosif might make it kosher, right? Because it doesn't have the dignity of the formality of being manufactured. But conversely, right, Baltosif also might make it not kosher because it's in violation of the law. So we're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that it doesn't get a heksher. So Baltosif is not clear. I want to know the name, right? Not necessarily the name of an individual, but who was it who most clearly articulated the position that putting four extra sets of strings on a pair, on a square baguette that already has four sets of strings, is not going to be kosher? Who most clearly articulated that position? Rav Papa was a defender, right, of that position, but he wasn't the one who initially made that position, who initially suggested it. The Gemara doesn't give us a name for who suggests it. It's what we call the Stama de Gemara. Right? Just the Gemara itself asks, how can Rabbi Zeira be correct? Don't we have an idea called Tase Velo Mina Asoi? Rabbi Zeira's case ought to be Minha Asoi, prefabricated tzitzis, and therefore it should be possible. So the Gemara doesn't give us a name, right? It's just what we call the Stama de Gemara, right? The Makshin in the terminology of the Achronim, right? It's whoever it was who formulated this question of the Gemara, that's who's asking the question. Then we had, after the Makshin, I heard somebody say the name before of who defended Rabbi Zeira. Rav Papa, according to the Rambam, defended Rabbi Zeira. Right, because according to the Rambam, both Rava and Rav Papa, right, were defending Rabbi Zeira. Rava said it's kosher because it's in violation of Baltosif, and Rav Papa said it's kosher because, this was Mr. Amster's Kiddush, Rav Papa said it's kosher because Kavana Levatel, because he intended to retire the first set of strings, therefore kosher. Okay, so that basically was the end of part one of the discussion of the halachos of a pair of tzitzis where you put in an extra four sets of strings. Then the Gemara began a second discussion about such a pair of tzitzis, and it began by talking about this strange object called a talis petura, right? A talis which is exempt. And the Gemara didn't know, just like you walk into a farm store, you say, please give me a talis petura, and we don't know exactly what that means. The Gemara didn't know exactly what it means. Describe to me what a talis petura is. And at first the Gemara suggested maybe a talis petura means a talis which is too small, right? So since it's too small, it's exempt from tzitzis. The Mefarshim explained, because you need the talis to be called kisuscha. That's the way that the Torah refers to a talis which is obligated in tzitzis. Al arba kanfos kisuscha asher techaseba, that you need to put tzitzis on the four corners of your kisus, of the thing that you cover yourself with, your garment that you cover yourself with. And something which is too small, which is below the requisite size, a person wouldn't be caught dead in the street wearing it, right? And a nine-year-old child, it wouldn't fit on a nine-year-old child to cover his head and most of his body. That can't be called kisuscha. I think that some people go even further. It's not just that it can't be called kisuscha, that a person can't have the connection that a person has with clothing, with such a garment. It may not be a kisus at all. Right? It may be a shmata. It may be a rag. It's not a piece of clothing. It's too small, right, to be a piece of clothing. Then I'm not sure. Somebody may say that. I don't remember exactly. It may be that it's not simply a lack of being your clothing because you can't have that connection with it, but it may not be clothing at all. And it's clothing for an infant. So that means different story. But it may not be clothing. So the Gemara said, okay, let's see for a second. Let's say you have this talis petura. It's square. It's square, but it's exempt from tzitzis because it's too small. So what about kelayim? Right, the halacha is, Rabbi Zeira says, a talis petura is exempt from kelayim. If a talis which is too small is a talis petura, so then it would have to be exempt from kelayim. So that's where we're up to in the Gemara right now. We're trying to test out. Can the talis petura, which is exempt from kelayim, be referring to a talis which is too small? Or not. And so here the Gemara tells us on Daf Mem Aleph Amar Aleph, three lines from the top. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nihiya B'Dvaro. So the Braisa just finished telling us that if the talis is too small, if it does not fit a 9-year-old, even if an adult would be willing to go outside on an inconsistent basis in such a talis, it is exempt from tzitzis. And says the Braisa, second to last word on the third line, V'chein le'inyan kilayim. And the same is true for kilayim. So there is a distinction between a talis which is the right size and a talis which is too small, not just with regard to tzitzis, but also with regard to kilayim. So by tzitzis, if it's big enough, it's chayiv in tzitzis. If it's too small, it is pater from tzitzis. What's the parallel distinction when it comes to kelayim? So the Gemara has two suggestions. Number one, maybe it means that if it's big enough, then it poses a problem of shatnez. But if it's too small, so then there is no problem of shatnez. That's suggestion number one. Just like tzitzis, if it's big enough, you need to put on tzitzis. If it's too small, you don't need tzitzis. If it's big enough, so there's a problem of kelayim. If it's too small, maybe there's no problem of kelayim. If that is true, so then, Rabbi Zeira's statement that a talis petura, right, doesn't pose a problem of kelayim, right, is a talis which is the right size is pater because of the gedilim tasalach, tzitzis is exempt from shatnez, and a talis which is too small is pater from kelayim because it's too small. So it would work with Rabbi Zeira if that's true. However, says the Gemara, take a look. Ve'avinan ba. So ve'avinan ba. The entire Talmud is described as Havayos of Abaye and Rava. Right? Havaya means the being.
The discussion.
Right? The discussion. So Havinan Ba, right, means they discuss this. Right? And very often it's used to introduce a question. Mai V'chein Le'inyan Kelayim. What is this, quote, V'chein Le'inyan Kelayim, unquote? In what way is there a distinction between a big enough talis and a too small talis by kelayim, just like there is such a distinction when it comes to tzitzis? And at first we said, ilema, if you'll say, v'chein le'inyan isura de kelayim, that there's a distinction with regard to the isur, to the prohibition of kelayim, that if it's large enough, so then the prohibition of kelayim applies, it poses a problem of shatnez, but if it's too small, so then perhaps there is no prohibition of kelayim. That would be the distinction. The distinction pertains to the isra of kelayim. Says the Gemara, v'ha anan tanan, but didn't we learn? Right? Which of the words means we? Which of the words means learn? Alvin. Anan. Anan is like anachnu. Same first two letters as anachnu. Ha anan tanan. Didn't we learn in Mishnah, ein arai b'kelayim? That there's no distinction in kelayim between something that you go out with on an inconsistent basis or something that you go out with on a consistent basis. There's no difference at all. So even if
kelayim is kelayim,
right? Kelayim is kelayim, shatnez is shatnez. This, by the way, supports the opinion of the Bach, right? The Bach said that if it fits a child, but you wouldn't go out with it, right? You wouldn't go out with it on an inconsistent basis, it's pater. If you would go out with it on an inconsistent basis, but it doesn't fit a child, it's pater. So here, right, we're saying, ein arai b'kelayim, this heter, right, that applies elsewhere, that if it's something that you wouldn't go out with even on an inconsistent basis, it's for wearing in the home, strictly in the home, so then that distinction between willing to go out with it, arai, or never willing to go out with it, does not apply to kilayim. In other words, that the iser of shatnis applies across the board, whether it's normal size, whether it's a little too small, or whether it's so small that you wouldn't be caught dead in the street wearing it. Makes no difference. Ein arai b'kilayim. There's no distinctions between kilayim the way that there are elsewhere between a beggar that you would go out with arai and a beggar that you would not go out with arai. Ein arai b'kilayim. So therefore,
to have a minute to talk about the possibility of something arrive with kalayim. You know, it's across the board, as you said. You can't wear kalayim. It never said a shear anywhere that it's less than something that you could maybe. So, how did the Gemara get into this?
Additional? That's the problem with the Braita. The Braita said, V'chen linyan kilayim. So he asked, where did you come from? That's your question.
So the question is logically speaking, right? Or, so I think, yeah, it's a very interesting. Any suggestions?
What's a beged?
What's a beged? Maybe, right, if it's a shmata.
Well, we've been concerned about, like, when you check shatnez, right? You check the threads. You know, the buttons, so you know, anything. So I'm just saying, logically, I understand it was a brisa, but what was the hamamina that we could have had a brisa like this?
Yeah, so here's, we have a suggestion, right? That maybe if something is so small that it's not considered a beged, then there shouldn't be a problem of kilayim.
But we're concerned even today about pillows and about blankets.
Because of the maskana. Right, we're brainwashed almost by what we know, right, to be the truth about kilayim. But that we only know that because the Amoraim in the Gemara did the work for us. So we're going back and retracing the steps. And one of my favorite stories when I was a teenager, right, was about a world where instead of having to learn a craft, right, you just went at a certain age and they programmed it into your brain. And so the kids didn't have to learn anything. When they turned, you know, 5, they would get programmed how to read, and then they would enjoy themselves until they turned whatever it was, 18 or 20, and then they would get programmed with whatever profession it was, right, that they, and that was how the world worked. And the protagonist of the story was basically told when he came there that his brain was not programmable. And so therefore he had to go to a home for the... you know, whatever it was called, mentally, you know, whatever it was, and the only way, and if he wanted, you know, his dream was to be a computer programmer, and if he wanted to do it, he would have to teach himself from books. They couldn't program his brain. And so over the course, right, of that story, you know, he goes to this place, and he starts to look around and think about the system, and what he discovers is that all of the people the knowledge was programmed into their head, like they weren't able to transcend the knowledge that they had. And so he goes to these competitions, you know, and it's clear that the one who had the most recent, you know, program, right, was able to use the newer machines, and the ones who had the older programs, you know, weren't able, because these people had never been accustomed to learning, right? So they just got all the information in their head in one dose, and so none of them knew how to update, how to stay on top of things. If you were programmed to use the older machines, you would use the older ones. If you were programmed to use the newer ones, then you would use the newer ones. And so he said, this is really silly. Why don't we teach people out of books like I'm doing, right? And then people will be able to grow, right, as the machines grow. And then he thought to himself and he said, wait a second. Who makes the new machines anyhow? Like, you can't program, right, an inventor. And then it dawns on him, right, that's really, it's not that his brain wasn't programmable, it's that they discovered that he had the capacity to invent, right, to apply old knowledge to develop new things. And that put a totally different perspective on it. So very often we have the same situation, right, when it comes to Gemara. We already know from the time that we were little children, this is shatnez, this is you know, tzitzis, whatever it is. But then when there are new circumstances that arise, it's very, very difficult to use that. That's what we call yediyas hamishnah, right? It's the mishnah level of knowledge of things. It's very difficult then to apply it to a new situation. That's why Rabbi Shachter likes to say that when Rabbi Soloveitchik was first came to YU, so he used to give the Bechinos on Yoredeya. And he discovered something very interesting. That Rabbi Shachter says he discovered that in those early years, that if he asked the students a question where the case appeared in Shulchan Aruch, where the case appeared in the Mefarshim of the Shulchan Aruch, they knew the answer. But if he asked them a question where a detail varied, even if very slightly, from the Shulchan Aruch, suddenly they were lost, because they were learning it like Mishnah. This is the case, this is the halacha. This is the case, this is the halacha. This is the case, this is the halacha. And so they didn't have the skills, right, to apply, right, the raw body of knowledge to new sets of cases. So that's very much what the Gemara is trying to do here. It's asking us to question, to demolish our assumptions, and to reconstruct them. And if we are accustomed to reconstructing, right, where our assumptions come from, so then hopefully we'll be able, right, again, with a lot of experience and practice, but to apply them to new cases as well. And if you look at the poskim and the shailos and tshuvos, look at Rav Moshe Feinstein, look at Rav Ovadia Yosef, you'll discover that this process is at work. They go back, right? They question all the assumptions, they survey, right, how everything is built up to the point that we know where it is today, and then they take it a step further and they apply it to new circumstances. And so on the one hand, it appears, right, to be a redundant exercise. Why are we questioning what seems to be unquestionable? It goes without saying, of course, a shmata, there's a problem of kilayim of shatnis, the same way that there is in a shirt, right, or a jacket. But at the same time, right, very often, and it's hard to know how until the new circumstance arises and suddenly say, oh, right, if you just, the Gemara is pointing an arrow to me, right, but until we get that new circumstance, it's hard to know, right, what's the out there in the outer space, you know, far, far beyond where the arrow is pointing. Yes?
The question was asked, why would you think that it referred to climb itself? Because that's the lesson of the mission, the Bryce of Chayn, Leinian climb. It doesn't suggest a connection with climb and census. It's just the next climb is somehow better.
Yeah.
So that's why they asked first that, and then they went to, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. That's
right. Yeah. So we have here the possibility, right, which we know already is going to be rejected, that a shmata is pater from kilayim until it's the right size. And how do we know that it's rejected? Because the Mishnah says, ein arai b'kilayim, there are no distinctions between clothing that you wouldn't be caught outside with, clothing that you'd be caught outside with on an inconsistent basis, clothing you'd be caught outside with, right, regularly, makes no difference. Shatnez is shatnez, no matter how small. Sounds like Dr. Seuss. Okay. So, So therefore, the Gemara needs a new explanation of what it means that that talis petura is exempt from kilayim. You need some case where some talis is exempt from tzitzis, right? But, and even though it's exempt from tzitzis, there still is no problem of kilayim. So the Gemara says, Ella mai petura, rather, right? Ella is always a retraction. At first we thought that petura means a talis which is too small. Now the word Ella says, forget about everything that went beforehand. Oh, v'ha anantanan, v'amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, v'chein le'inyan sadin b'tzitzis. So if you have, right, a linen garment, and you have wool tzitzis, and it's too small, the garment is too small, so then there will be a problem of kilayim. Just like when the garment is too small without tzitzis, there's a problem of kilayim, says Rav Nachman. If the garment is too small, then even with tzitzis, there's still a problem, right, of kilayim. Because a garment that's too small is entirely exempt from tzitzis. No matter what perspective, what vantage point you look at it from, the garment is too small, it's exempt from tzitzis. If you're not fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis with this garment, so then the problem of kilayim, right, besieges and besets you. So therefore, the Gemara says, Ella, rather, right, Ella always means erase everything that came beforehand, go back to the kasha, right, and into parentheses everything in between the initial question and the word Ella. Ella is going to present a new perspective, a fresh approach, right, to whatever the difficulty is. So what's our difficulty that Ella is trying to resolve? And where are we going to put our open parentheses? Right? Ella always means that you have to put a parenthesis on the segment that came before. So where does the parenthesis open? Where is the last question that we left off with that the Ella is now going to present a fresh response to? Okay, we have from here, we have my petura. Now, what's the definition of the talis petura? And from this side, we have. Mean v'chein le'inyan kelayim. Ah, because the Gemara also had a my over there, right? My v'chein le'inyan kelayim. What does it mean, right? That there's a difference between a big talis and a small talis for a kelayim. No, so that wasn't that the previous line, the Amr of Nachman by Yitzchak? When we say v'chein le'inyan, so v'chein le'inyan, so kilayim, the commentary on kilayim is sodin betzitzis. So Rav Nachman by Yitzchak already answered that my, and what gives that away is that it's v'chein le'inyan. Rav Nachman by Yitzchak just substituted two more precise words, sodin betzitzis, for the more vague and ambiguous word of kilayim. That's the way that the Gemara does commentary. It's very subtle. They don't tell you like Rashi does that I'm going to have two dots followed by a bold dibur hamaschil followed by one dot followed by the commentary. Right? What the Gemara just does is it rephrases, it paraphrases the previous statement, but with a little bit more clarity. So whereas the Mishnah said v'chein le'inyan kilayim, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak says v'chein le'inyan sodin betzitzis, which is a form of kilayim, and that's Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak's way of commenting, right, on the Mishnah, and the fact that they both begin with v'chein le'inyan sort of gives it away to those who are familiar with the Gemara's style. So the Ella, right, is not referring to the question of my v'chein le'inyan kilayim, what is this v'chein, but rather it's referring to the question earlier, right, the next to last question, which was my talis petura. Right, what is this talis petura? So the Gemara says v'chein le'inyan sodin betzitzis. Ella my petura, it means hitio limutalis. Right, that's a talis petura. Talis petura is a type of talis that you buy, right, in the store anytime. It's exempt already from tzitzis. In other words, right, it's exempt. You don't need to put tzitzis on it because it already has tzitzis on it. Now you're going to put more tzitzis on it, more sets of strings, not just more strings in the knots that you have, but more sets of strings. So you may think that would pose a problem, right, of kilayim. The first set of strings has a pass. It's exempt from kilayim because otherwise how can you fulfill tcheles? But a second set of strings, perhaps, right, should cause it to violate kilayim. Says the Mishnah, no, it doesn't violate kilayim. Even if it has eight sets of strings, right? Again, it's kshera. You can still fulfill your mitzvah with it. And since you're fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis, you're not violating the isser of shatnez. So that's the talis petura. So in other words, we now have the idea. The abstract principle is that a talis, which had four strings on it, you put four more strings on it, so that talis is kosher. Maybe you have to take off the first four strings, but the fact is that talis is kosher, and it does not become irrevocably pasul because you put those four strings onto it. One nafkamina of this is that the talis is kosher. You can wear it. It's not a violation of wearing a four-cornered garment without kosher tzitzis. You can fulfill your mitzvah of tzitzis with this hitio limutalis talis. That's one nafkamina, right? That you're allowed to wear it, and you may wear it in order to fulfill your mitzvah. We're adding on a second nafkamina, namely, since you're fulfilling your mitzvah with it, therefore, there is no iser of kilayim, because whenever you're fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis, right, you have an exemption from the iser of kilayim. The Gemara feels, though, that these two nafkaminas of the same principle, that a hitil limutalis kshera, that it goes without saying, almost. So the Gemara is troubled and says, the ha'amar chada zimna. And we already have this already. The ha'amar Rabbi Zeira chada zimna. Didn't Rabbi Zeira say this already? Zman echad, one time. He already said it one time. And the Gemara answers, chada miklal chaverta itmar, that one of them, right, was Rabbi Zeira only said it once, and somebody inferred the second statement from the first statement. So it wasn't as if Rabbi Zeira said it on Wednesday and then reviewed it on Thursday, and someone was there on Wednesday, not there on Thursday. Someone else was there on Thursday and wasn't there on Wednesday, and so we had two separate reports of what Rabbi Zeira said. Rabbi Zeira presumably said the second statement, right? Namely, that this is not what Rashi says, this is what Tosfos will say. Right? Rabbi Zeira said in the name of Shmuel that a hitil mutalas is exempt from shatnez because you're in fulfillment of the mitzvah of tzitzis. And from there, right, Rabbi Zeira's students inferred, right, the principle, which was hitil mutalas kshera, that you're obviously fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis with this eight-stringed, or formerly eight-set talis, and there's no problem of tase velo mina asli. So chada miklal chaverta itmar, Rabbi Zeira said either said the specific, and then using the process of induction, his students formulated that as a general rule, right? Or he formulated it as a general rule, talis, right? Hitil mutalis kshera, and using the process of deduction, his students formulated a practical outcome of that. They said there's no problem of kilayim. He only said one of them, and his students figured out the other one, and that's how we have both of the reports. One of them is Rabbi Zeira, what he actually said. The second one is what his students inferred from what he said. Okay, so that brings to a conclusion the sugya of the smallest talis that you ever did see.
I'm confused.
Yes.
Which petura is it talking about? There are two mentions of the word petura. One in Rav Zeira's statement, and one in this Brisa statement.
Which Brisa?
Third line from the top.
The it says Amar of Zera, Amar of Master, Amar Shmuel, Tchelas Ein Bamashim Klein, Bafilu Batalis Ptur. That's Rab Zera's statement. And then the Brisa says Talis Shakatim Mishasiba, Rosh of Rubai, Rosh of Rubai, Afa Pisha Gol Yotzebe Rai, is Ptur, Bechain Linin Klein. So which Ptur are they talking about? The Brisa's Ptur or Rab Zera's Ptur?
I'll explain that.
So again, we've been discussing two different talisos, right? One of them is too small, and one of them at one point had eight sets of strings. Now, if you want to know, which one do you fulfill your mitzvah with? Too small, you don't fulfill your mitzvah. Eight set of strings, you do fulfill your mitzvah.
So
which one is exempt from kilayim? Too small is obligated, there's still a problem of kilayim. Eight sets of strings, there's no problem of kilayim. Those are the halachos that pertain to those two talisos.
So it's too small, there's a problem of kilayim.
There is a problem of kilayim.
Right,
now, both of them can be described as petura, because in both circumstances, whether it's too small, right, or whether it's got eight set of strings, that you, as a person, are exempt, right? You don't have to do anything. Right? You don't have to go ahead and put tzitzis on it before you wear it. It's kosher to wear as it is. So that's why we describe them as petura. But each one is pater for a different reason. The one that's too small is pater because it's not a beged. It's not kesuscha. So the Torah never said that you need to put tzitzis on it. The one that has the eight set of strings is pater because you don't need to do anything because you already did what you needed to do. So you're exempt, right, because you already discharged your obligation, not because you don't need to put the tzitzis on, because you already did put the tzitzis on. And it's that difference between the two types of petura that inform the two different halachos, that the one of them you can't fulfill your mitzvah with, and therefore it does pose a problem of shatnez. The other you could fulfill your mitzvah with, and therefore does not pose a problem of shatnez.
Oh, so when it says my petura, it's talking about Rav Zeira's petura.
When, at what point?
In the Gemara, it never says my petura by Bechein Linyan Klein.
Right, exactly.
It just says my petura here, and that's talking about Rav Zeira's.
The my petura from that it probably appears before we even mentioned the talis that's too small.
That's
right. That's on the that's second to last line of Mem Amabez. It's before we even mentioned the talis that's too small. The only reason that we had that red herring, right, is because we saw that the Brisa called it petura.
Right.
Right. But it was a red herring. We needed to go on to a different definition of what talis petura is. Okay. So we need. Could you volunteer for? We need a volunteer. We had a volunteer for the talis that's too small. We need a volunteer for the talis that's too big. It's got to be somebody who's tall, but not too tall.
Just right.
Hmm?
Define a tall.
You are the tallest in the class.
My tall, not too tall.
You already volunteered, so you don't get to volunteer today. Like Lechem upon him. Somebody?
You are the tallest guy in the class. Yes, you are.
I'm probably too tall.
Come, can you volunteer? Can you volunteer for us? Thank you. Okay. So, you could just come up here. And if you could just put this talus on for us.
Don't say it.
This is yours.
No, you can't say brach on it because it doesn't have tittus on it.
Oh, okay.
This is
so turn around so that everyone can see what you're doing.
Oh,
no, white butter. Is there a bottom? Yeshua, right.
It looks like a tablecloth.
Yes, it does.
Oh,
wow. You're actually managing to do it.
Hey, that's fruit with a tablecloth.
Yeah. You can be a fruit with a tablecloth.
What are you doing?
Don't make a problem, Carl.
It's a little bit big. Not so easy to put on. Do me a favor. Why don't you try? Oh, let's see. You got it.
The other side
doesn't have four corners.
It has.
It has four corners. No, it's curved. Yeah, that's immaterial. The point is, take the length instead of the width, and then you'll be able to put it on.
Oh yeah, I'm afraid that my longest tablecloth is not long enough. Ah. Yasher Koach, beautiful. So we have here a very interesting solution to the problem of a talus which is too big. Wait, stand right there. I just want to demonstrate, right, that this corner, which in an ordinary talus would be a regular corner, as you can see is folded over, right, you fold the talus in half and then you put it on, so then you don't have the problem of it being too big. And so the question becomes, let's say, right, that you've got a talus which is too big, right, and so in order to wear it properly, you fold over the corner. That's just the natural thing to do. Thank you very much. Can you have three cheers if you wish? And so the natural thing to do is to fold it in half, or perhaps even in quarters. We'll deal with now with folding it in half. So now this tablecloth, which formerly was much too long, is now exactly the right size. Because I folded it in half. Perfect. It fits just right. Right? But the only thing is that the front corner, right, is not really a corner. It's actually the midpoint, right, of a line that forms from one of the long corners to the other long corner of the tablecloth. And so the question becomes, where would I put tzitzis on this type of talus, if at all? So we have... Okay, that's a good question. Right now it's not sewn. So the question, we'll ask the question right now and not soon. So there's three options. Option number one is, right, you don't put tzitzis on it at all. If it's so long, it must be a tablecloth, not a piece of clothing. Right? It would fit Og Melech HaBashan, but not anybody else. So that's what we call a tablecloth. It would fit a big dining room table. It does not fit a person. So perhaps it's not a ksus, it's not a baged, and it doesn't need tzitzis at all. Right, that's one possibility. A second possibility is that you put tzitzis over here. Regardless of the fact, right, that this is not, you know, a corner in the sense that when you lay out the baged, right, it's not really, right, it's not at the corner, but it's in the middle. But the fact is that whenever this baged is worn, because the only way that you can wear it is by folding it in half, so this always ends up being the front corner when you're wearing it. So maybe you should put the tzitzis, right, in this corner, even though it's the midpoint, right, of the line. Right? Or, third possibility, not that you don't put any tzitzis on it, not that you put the tzitzis at the midpoint, but rather, perhaps, you would put tzitzis here, one here, right, on the two corners, even though they're both hanging down and back, right, and then the other two corners, right, which again are hanging down and back, and so I would end up having all four tzitzis in the back, like a cape, right, because that is where the corners of the tablecloth are. So we have three possibilities, either no tzitzis, and then there will be no tzitzis in the front, because this is not a corner, this is just the midpoint. Right? Either tzitzis, no tzitzis, tzitzis at the midpoint, which is the corner when it's folded in half, right? Or tzitzis on the genuine corners, the way that they're corners when they are unfolded. So, that is the controversy that we're about to encounter, and there are definitely two caveats, as Rabbi Tannenbaum pointed out. So one issue is, right, are we talking about like a tablecloth which is not sewn together? Right, or are we talking about, if I stitch together the sides, perhaps that simply makes it into a talus with a lining? Right, if I fold it in half, so it's either it's a hemmed talus, it's a talus with a lining, right? Or do I say that the stitching makes no difference? It has to do with the way that the baguette is woven. So that's one issue. And a second issue is, precisely how big is this talus? Are we talking about a talus which is much, much, much too big, right? In which it's the only thing it could possibly be is a tablecloth? Or are we talking about a talus that would fit a person, right? You know, like Michael Jordan or whoever it is, it's going to fit a 6-7 foot person, right? But it's not going to fit a regular 5 foot person. And so perhaps there's a difference there. Well, Oyim HaBashan is already a league unto himself. I don't think they would let him play in the So there may be a difference between something which is so big, it doesn't fit any normal person, and therefore you would classify it as a tablecloth and it is potter, as opposed to something which fits somebody. It may be a little big, but it fits somebody. It's that extra, 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 extra large, which you somehow, it's the only suit that you can find on the rack. At least if you shop where I shop, that's all. Or you have whatever the extra, it fits somebody, but it doesn't fit you. So in order to make it fit you, you have to fold it over as if it were a tablecloth. So that's going to be another distinction. And as we go through the sugya, we have to ask ourselves which type of talus, right, are we talking about? At every stage, are we talking about a talus that's sewn or a talus which is not sewn? Are we talking about a talus which is too big for anybody, or are we talking about a talus which is just too big for you or for me? So let's just see that inside. Tanu Rabbanon. A braisa tells us the following. Talus kefula. A talus which is doubled over. Chayeves betzitzis, you need to put tzitzis on it. Does that tell us, by the way, where the tzitzis need to go?
No.
Not yet. It just tells me that I need to put on tzitzis, which means either at the four corners or at the one corner and at the midpoint. But it's chayev and tzitzis according to the Tanna Kamma, and Rabbi Shimon is poter. Rabbi Shimon says that it is exempt from tzitzis. Now, if you look at Rashi for a second, Rashi tells us, Rabbi Shimon Poter. That wasn't what I was looking for. So let's forget that for a second. So Rabbi Shimon says that it doesn't need tzitzis. The Tanna Kamma says that it does need tzitzis. Again, if the Tanna Kamma says that it needs tzitzis, when Rabbi Shimon says it doesn't need tzitzis, and I know that Mr. Amster is going to have a very strong opinion about this, so does Rabbi Shimon mean that it doesn't need tzitzis at all? Or does Rabbi Shimon mean it doesn't need tzitzis where the Tanna Kamma says it needs tzitzis?
I don't specify where.
He didn't specify where, but presumably he had an opinion about where, right? Whatever the most logical place to keep put the tzitzis are. The corners, and so maybe Rabbi Shimon, when he says petura, means you don't need to put the tzitzis in the corners, right? But instead you put it on one corner and at the midpoint. Potter means potter, right? We're very literalist over here. If he says potter, it means potter. Tanakama means either at the corners, right, or at the midpoint, or maybe at both. Right, or maybe at whichever one you choose. Right, and Rabbi Shimon says, don't put tzitzis anywhere. This is not a baguette, it's a tablecloth.
I think, according to Rashi, it seems that Tanna Kamma say you put it in the middle. Because she'im tipashet nimtzet tzitzit b'emtzaita. So means that the assumption is that Tanna Kamma say fold it and put the tzitzit in the middle. And that's why Rav Shimon say no, because if you open it, mm-hmm. it won't be in the corners.
Right. So wrong. everyone has So the Tanakhama, the way that Rashi interprets the Tanakhama, we'll see some evidence for this later on, is that you put the tzitzis at the midpoint. Now, in light of what we discovered about jackets and shirts not needing tzitzis, does that make sense, by the way? It makes a lot of sense. Why is a jacket exempt from tzitzis? Why is a shirt exempt from tzitzis? Why is a tie exempt from tzitzis?
Because the tzitzis have to be together.
No, because if it has six corners, it's got four corners. You can't have six corners without having four corners.
It just that they have to be in front and in the back. That's the key.
Right, so we had this once or twice before, right? That the Beis Yosef suggests that you only need tzitzis, right, if you're going to be surrounded, right, on all four sides. Now the garment has four corners, right, but there's a medrash. This is amazing that the Beis Yosef exempts our shirts and jackets on the basis of it's like a medrash agada, basically, that you're supposed to be surrounded on four sides by tzitzis, and so jacket where everything's in front is exempt from tzitzis, a shirt where all the corners are in front is exempt from tzitzis. And so it makes a lot of sense if the Tanakhama, right, believes that, right, that there's a chiyuv in tzitzis. If the Beis Yosef is right, the only way there can be a chiyuv in tzitzis is if the tzitzis are going to be two in front and two in back, right? And the only way you're going to get that is if you put tzitzis on the midpoint. Because if you put the tzitzis on the four corners of the actual garment, so then you're going to end up with four tzitzios in the back, right? So Rashi's opinion, right, which the Gemara is going to support in a second, seems to work out very nicely with the Beis Yosef's explanation, right? We don't have tzitzis on our jackets because all the corners are in front, and obviously the Tanakhama cannot require you to put tzitzis on all the corners of that tablecloth because all the corners are in back. So if he says you need to put tzitzis on it, he must mean you put tzitzis on the midpoints, which are in front, and on two of the corners, which are in the back. And Rabbi Shimon... What? One, two, three, four, five, six. Looks like a... Is that a corner? Is that a corner? Is that a corner? The angles don't have to be 90 degrees in order to be corners. You can have a corner which is an acute corner, you can have an obtuse corner, or you could have a right corner. I spread the garment out. This is an acute corner. This is an obtuse corner. Those are also corners. Right? And we had a little bit of a discussion last week about why we don't say, okay, so if we have this, and then two in the back, I've got the four corners, right? Why there's no tzitzis? So we said that it's a talis atum, that it needs to be that there's a split up to halfway, and if there's no split up to halfway, so then we say that the robe of the garment, which is uncornered, right, is the ikar, and the miut of the garment, which is cornered, is a tafel. What? No, but if you spread out a shirt, it's got the four corners. But if you spread out a jacket, you'll discover that most of the jacket is just is not cornered, right? The ones in front and the back, the split doesn't go up all the way. Yeah, so that's that was last week's discussion, and I would spend more time reviewing it, but I want to just get to a stopping point before we have to break for Shabbos. So the Tanakhama says that this talis is chayv in tzitzis. Right, right now we'll work with the opinion that he says you need to put one tzitzis on the midpoint and one tzitzis in the back. And Rabbi Shimon says pater, which I think that the consensus is that it's pater entirely. If it's too big, it's a tablecloth, it's not a garment, and therefore the Torah never required that it have tzitzis. Vishavin, however, everyone agrees, she'im kafla v'tofra, that if you doubled it over and you sewed it, so then shechayeves, then it is obligated in tzitzis, again, presumably at the midpoint and in the back. Now, how much do you have to sew it is an interesting question. Well, we won't go into that right now, but if it's sewn up, so it's good. And the Gemara says, Tafra, you sewed it, pshita, of course. Right, of course you need tzitzis. Then it just becomes like a talis with a lining, right? A talis that was hemmed. It's not a talis kfula anymore, but it's a talis which is a little bit hollow. It has a packet inside of it. And the Gemara says, lo, no, it's not so simple. Tzricha, I need this statement. Dinokta besiche. We're talking about a case, right, where he sewed it up in a somewhat impermanent fashion. Now, what exactly is a siche? We may need to look and see how the Talmud uses that word siche elsewhere. Does it mean a safety pin? Does it mean a temporary stitch? Does it mean a loose stitch? Right? Does it mean anything, you know, short of regular stitching?
That's permanent. Not permanent. A basting instead
of sewing, like.
What's basting exactly?
Like a temporary stitch.
Line. Temporary stitch, okay. So all that we know right now is that siche means some sort of a deficient, of a not perfect, of an inefficient type of stitch. And we may have to survey, right, how the Gemara uses that word siche elsewhere in order to have a better idea, right, of what it means. But there's a quick story that the Gemara is going to tell us, and we should finish off with this story because that's going to mark the division point between this sugya and the next. So let's just see the story. Rabba Bar Huna. Rabba Bar Huna Ikla Lebe Rava Bar Rav Nachman. He happened to visit the home of Rava, the son of Rav Nachman. Chazyeh, he saw him, like Chazon, right? We're going to have Shabbos Chazon, right, coming up. So he saw him. Chazon means the vision, right? The vision of Yeshayahu. Right? Chazon Ish means the vision of Avraham Yeshayahu. That's the name of the Sefer, where it comes from. Chazyeh, he saw him to have a michsi talis kefula, that he was covered, kisus, right, with a doubled over talis. In other words, he was wearing a talis, just like we had been wearing that tablecloth a moment ago. Virami lechute, and he had placed strings ilave al on the kfela, on the point where it was doubled over. In other words, at the midpoint where the talis was folded. If shita, when he took the talis off, asa chuta, the strings came to come lehade resha. So for some reason, when he took the talis off, he put it like this. Right, and the strings were over here. They were on top of his head, on top of his rosh, right? They were on top of his rosh rather than being in the front on the side. Become lehadei resha. Those strings, they stood at his head rather than over here where they belonged. So he said to him, Amar Lehi said, Lav hainu kanaf dekasav rachmana beoraisa. This is not the corner which the Torah, which God wrote, which the Merciful One wrote in the Torah. So asa shadye, so Rava took off this talis. He was not going to wear it again as it was. He would either have to take the tzitzis, he would either have to fix it or do something else with it. And ichsi glima achrite, he covered himself with a different coat, with a different garment. And so that is the end of the part of the story that pertains to our sugya. The story has a second part. That part introduces the next sugya. So right now, just we'll have to maybe review next week just what are our conclusions here. If you've got a talis, which is the biggest talis that you ever did see, so what should you do? Do you put tzitzis on it? And if you do put the tzitzis on it, where do you put the tzitzis? Right, we have to know what the halacha l'maisa is. We also have to know what type of a connection, what type of a sewing. Right, is a safety pin, right, or is a safety pin considered sewn together, right, or not? That's going to be really the question. What is siche? If siche means even a safety pin, so then we would cease to view, right, talus, which is pinned together, as being a longer talus, and instead we would view it as only half the size. If the siche doesn't make the effect, if it needs to be some sort of a more permanent type of stitch, so then the safety pin won't make a difference. Just 1 second. Alvin, and then Rabbi Tannenbaum.
In the case of a tzitzit, so which normally has the open sides,
which
would be okay to connect the sides together as long as the tzitzit themselves are not touching.
As long as... Well, that's going to be the question of what are siche. So we'll have to, we may have to come back to that as a Shem next week. So, interesting. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Okay. So that's...